Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. It's Friday. We made it through another week. I think we had a very interesting week this week. It always takes me by surprise when I realize something that I decide everybody else is talking about, so we need to discuss it. Always comes full circle and brings us right back to what we talk about on this show all the time. Bad behavior, poor leadership, bullying, all of those things play into our everyday behavior, our everyday interactions. Now, one of the most interesting things that I think came to light yesterday when I continued my conversation in regard to this last night with a family member is the fact that a lot of people get stuck in a lifestyle or in a behavioral pattern because they never learn anything different. They think that what they endure, or in some cases, what they perpetrate, is normal, is okay. That's the way everybody treats everybody else. And I still have the question in my head, how do you change that thought pattern with someone? How do you, I mean, I've heard these statements in my lifetime. Well, that's the way we've always done it. Yeah, well, that's what we believe in my family. We believe that, you know, you can do this, this, or that, and, you know, it's just the way you do. It's just the way it goes at my house. Or I remember being at my grandparents' house, and that's the way we did it there. Even if it's not healthy, not good, unsupportive, especially to the young minds and the young people that are growing up in that atmosphere. So I posted that on Facebook this morning. I said, you know, what advice? Shelley and I talked about it yesterday. We're going to talk about it again today, along with some of the other things that we talked about this week. But I'd really like everybody to think about that. If you know of a family who thinks it's all right to be violent with each other, be unpredictable with commands and demands on each other that put each other in a bad place, I think we need to maybe start in that arena to let people know that bad behavior in any way, shape, or form shouldn't be acceptable. Even if it's been a part of your life for the entirety of your life, if it hurts you, makes you sad, makes you angry, you need to address it. Something's wrong with that. So let's bring in Shell, and of course we'll start with Monday, but I think that's where we're ultimately going to end up, is what we can say to the people that we know have become oblivious to the kind of life that they are living because it's all they ever knew. So good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How you doing, honey?
I'm doing very good. Of course, I get on the show and my big black lab starts sneezing again. He kept doing that yesterday, quiet all morning. How you doing, Shell? And he's standing next to me, he sneezes. And he's like a truck driver. You can hear him across the room.
That's funny. You know,
anyway.
You open up, you by telling me that story, you open up a little segue that I wasn't going to share today, but now I think it's appropriate. There was a young girl in a school that was suspended for saying bless you in a classroom.
Oh, for God's
after somebody
sake.
Sneezed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I heard this. I think that's ludicrous.
Well, a teacher apparently has
certain... I'm wondering
if
that's a made-up story or if that really happened, because that sounds completely ludicrous.
I wish that it was made up. I don't know that it was. I wish that it was made up just to get everybody thinking about it, but I do think there are people that are so in their own world that even if you don't believe in God, even if you don't believe in anything or believe in everything, it's not your right. If you're a teacher, if you're the president of the United States, it's not your right to tell somebody else that they cannot believe in something like that. Those kind of things are private and personal. And that's why we live in the United States, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
So, but I do think that there are people, for whatever reason.
Well,
that's like...
dollar bill in the United States, and on the back it says "In God We Trust."
Right.
So, God is kind of like the all-encompassing word for the fact that there's some greater power, whether you call it Buddha or Allah or Krishna or God or the universe or whatever. There is, and it's been proven over and over again, that there is something outside of our three-dimensional solid bodies. And, when you get that and you allow yourself to feel that sense of connectedness, life is actually better. But,
Well, and I wouldn't want to think we were here all by ourselves, would you?
Of course not. So I don't understand,
the concept
behind that. I think it's ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
It would shock me and not shock me if that story turned out to be true. Because as ridiculous as it sounds, I know there are people that are so tunnel visioned and they think they're making a statement by that, and they're actually not. What they're doing is they're showing extreme ignorance of the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there is in the smallest of details, there is the fact that a school teacher in a middle school environment, that issue, the belief in a higher power, is way over her head and way out of her realm of being in charge. So,
well, one of the things, and I don't want to get off on a tangent, but just one comment I want to make, because we kind of tiptoed into this area a little bit. People have to understand, like every other profession, teachers are also not gods. Teachers will put their own personal opinions in what they teach children, which can sometimes be very dangerous. If you get someone who's a white supremacist teaching children, or if you get somebody who is prejudiced against white people, an African-American teacher, they can skew history to kind of alter
their advantage.
That is that when my nephew was going to school, I was outraged by this. There was a teacher who was teaching history and was telling the kids that the Holocaust never happened, that this was something that the Jews created in order to create worldwide sympathy for them, and that it never actually happened, that all those black and white photos were done in a sound lot, and stuff like that, a movie lot.
Wow.
And when my nephew came home and told me, I was infuriated. And we couldn't do anything. We went to the school, and the guy's like, well, that's what he believes. He's teaching a curriculum. Doesn't it have to be approved by somebody? But you could tell this guy was a real, like, almost like an Aryan. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this teacher was part of, like, some sort of, like, Third Reich, Nazi skinhead movement in the United States, because his views were so skewed. How does somebody like that become a teacher? And if that's his opinion, how does he deviate from normal curriculum and teach this to the kids? So my sister just took my nephew out of the class because they wouldn't make the teacher stop teaching it.
Well, that's an issue I think at some point in time we'll have to really educate ourselves on and and understand how that does work. I had always believed, and I too don't want to get off on this because it is Friday and we want to kind of touch base on everything that we talked about all week, but I would like to know what the protocol is for a teacher presenting their, you know, what they're going to teach, their whole program, their year's program. Is who makes the decision as to whether or not it is age appropriate, if it is indeed something that would be, acceptable. So I don't know what that is. Do you? Has anybody? I have two people in my family, immediate family, that have worked as teachers. And I may have a conversation with one of them this weekend just to get a feel for what he can fill me in on. But we've never asked one of the teachers when Amanda was on, and we had a couple other people who are teachers. We never talked about that. So that's an interesting bit of information that we could use to have. I think that would be good. Has anybody ever talked to you about their actual curriculum if they're a teacher?
Well, I believe that they do have to submit a curriculum, but who's to say that this teacher would actually put that in print that he was going to be spouting these particular opinions? He may submit what's in the textbooks and then spout his own opinion during class, because that's what he was doing. He was teaching the class and then saying the history books have it wrong, by the way, that type of deal. And so when my nephew came home, he was like, he was telling us, he said, you know, the Holocaust never happened, don't you? He said, that's just all propaganda. And it's like, you know, you're talking, we straightened him out, and he found out that wasn't the case because of our grandfather. And then that kind of snapped Derek around. But, but what about the kids that were growing up in families that were sort of leading towards white supremacy and just took it as face value? And
I'm glad you just said that, because that leads us in to, of course, what we talked about yesterday, and we are going to talk about that again, about what is perceived to be normal, and that everybody does it this way, and everybody thinks this way, and so even if you're completely unhappy and feel completely like this isn't what you thought it would be, but it's the way everybody is in your house, how do you come out of that, out of that mix? How do you escape from something that has been taught to you as being, you know, this is the way everybody thinks, this is the way everybody does it. Yes, it's normal for you to get punished if you've done something wrong and have to stay in your room for 3 days. Yes, that's under lock and key. Yes, that's normal. Or yes, it's normal for you to be beaten with a switch. Or yes, it's normal for this to happen and that to happen because it's all you ever know. So we will talk about that. But first, let's go to Monday's show. Remember the sting that was set up by a very misled school official who was not really official. She was a volunteer that we decided, since then I've researched a little bit, and yes, they do make a paycheck. It's not an enormous paycheck, but they are on payroll.
Well, they're not volunteers cases. Then. The school aide.
Right. They're aides. They're not volunteers. So, and that is the difference. The way you just said it is exactly what makes the difference. So she made a decision after hearing that something had occurred. And on one point, I want to say that we're glad she listened to the child because evidently nobody else was. So that part is good. But we also want to address the fact that, you know, what she set up was unorganized and really not the right thing for her to do. So she put a child who was developmentally challenged a bit. It doesn't say how badly, but it does mention the fact that there were some learning disabilities involved, and put her in harm's way. And actually, because of her decision to do this, she wasn't only in harm's way, she met harm. She was sodomized, and they don't go into detail about where she is now, what happened after that, none of that kind of stuff, because it's probably now involved in a court case, and there's probably been a gag order put on everything. So there may come a time when we'll know more about this. But what we really addressed was the fact that here a kid finally speaks up, one that's probably scared, one that thinks that maybe they had something to do with the attack, maybe it was their fault, because that seems to be an emotion that young people feel. So we talked about, you know, what the hell were they thinking? And how did this happen? And if you know you have more than one bathroom, why weren't there more? It sounds to me like somebody on a very busy day, I thought about this after we talked, sounded to me like on a very busy day, somebody made a decision to do something, then got carried away with something else. And even though that took precedence in the moment, some people can't have something very important going on and then deal with all the trivial happenings in a week, a day, or whatever, and stay focused.
Rainey, wait. That's not how the story was detailed. According to the teacher's aide, the one article I read said that she waited at the bathroom that she thought they had agreed that she would do the sting at.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the girl ended up going to a different bathroom. Not that she got caught up in her busy day. She thought the girl changed her mind and never showed up, so she went on about her day, if she's telling the truth. But what's mind-boggling...
Yes, that's right, but I'm talking about finishing up the details. I'm talking about not forgetting, but finishing up the details, making a game plan, and then not finishing up the details. There should have been a designation of bathroom. It sounds like we set something up really quickly and didn't think about the bathrooms, didn't think how many there were, didn't think to say, now you're sure you're going to go in this bathroom. That's what I'm talking about when I'm saying. Exactly. So, because that's all a part of the plan, right? I mean, if you're going to have a plan that's that intricate and that important, you have to take care of the details. And that's what
she
didn't
do. And the other
thing
I want to address something that you said when you started is that, you know, well, at least she listened, you know, to the young girl. I don't believe that's the case, because the other thing that I had read in one of the update articles is that the girl wanted no part of this thing. She wasn't complaining. I don't know why the teacher's aide selected this girl to be the one to do the sting operation, but she more or less coerced her into it by basically guilting her into, you have to be brave and help your other schoolmates. But this girl didn't want any part of this thing. So it's not like the teacher did. She was absolutely not listening to this girl, because the girl tried to resist it, and the teacher finally kind of bullied her into saying, okay, I'll participate. I'll help you out with this. Maybe she did that because she thought she could manipulate this girl because she was in special ed or something, I don't know. But that's the other question I have, is why did the teacher's aide think this girl was the girl to do it when she was, like, so resistant to it in the beginning? You know, there would
have
been other
girls.
Because
this girl is the one that came to her and said that she had been attacked. That's why.
And that's, I didn't read that in any of the stories.
Well, yeah, that's what the whole story was about, and that's why I said she listened to her. She said that these boys were messing with her and trying to hurt her. And she told this teacher, and this teacher said, reported this boy's behavior to the principal, and the principal said, well, he has to be caught in the act. So she enlisted, that's the way I understood it.
No, what I had read is that there were multiple reports from girls, that these boys were, you know, like, but I don't know that any of them had actually resulted in a rape. They were, like, taunting the girls like they were going to rape them and making them feel uncomfortable and being in the girls' bathroom inappropriately, things like that. But I don't know that any of them had actually resulted in a rape prior to this sting operation. But what I had read is that the whole sting operation was in result to multiple complaints. Because when you went through this kid's history, they said there were over 14 complaints against this kid for inappropriate let's see, four of them were for something else, eight of them were for sexual inappropriate behavior against other girls in the school. So it wasn't all this girl. It was a multitude of girls.
Yeah, but this is the one. Okay, now let me read this to you. In January 2010, a 14-year-old special needs student at Sparkman Middle School in Tony, Alabama, went to a teacher's aide named June Simpson and told her that a 16-year-old boy who was known for sexual harassment and violent behavior had propositioned her, telling her he wanted her to have sex with him in the school bathroom. Upon hearing this, she went to the school officials. And when that didn't work, she took it to the next level with county law enforcement. And instead of following the pedestrian series of steps, she decided to implement a clever plan and used the 14-year-old that came to her as bait.
That's why she chose her.
It makes a little bit more sense of why she chose her,
but it still goes to the fact that she didn't listen to the girl because the girl didn't want to be any part of this thing.
Well, see, in the three stories I read, I didn't read anything about that, but it doesn't surprise me. I wouldn't want to be a part of that. If somebody had threatened to hurt me, and I wasn't, I mean, I'm not the smartest kid in the class, that was for sure, but I certainly didn't have any of those kind of learning disabilities. But I wouldn't even want to be in his company again, let alone set up something like that. That would scare me.
Right. And that's probably why this one did end up in rape, because it wasn't just taunting. This kid had his sights on her as being somebody that he wanted to go that far with. So that's why it was even
somebody
more
that he figured he could get away with it with, because she had issues. And that happens a lot in a lot
that's
of the
right.
bullying things that we've seen. That is in many cases the real name of the game. It's, oh, look, we can mess with her because she's not smart enough to tell anybody, or she's not smart enough to think that it's not right. We've watched a million Law and Order shows about that kind of thing. So
I think the thing that
bothers
me the most about this case, I guess they're shoulder to shoulder here. The one thing that bothers me is the inappropriate action of all the adults in here, including the principal when the aide went to them and she wasn't given any specific direction about her idea. But the second thing is that this boy was never brought to justice. So they got their proof. This girl was
mm-hmm.
raped,
mm-hmm.
And then nothing happened to the boy anyway. So what was the whole, at least he had, I mean, it's still a terrible thing. I'm not minimizing it. But at least if there had been some justice, the girl could have, at least it was a point to what I did. It went awry, but at least the end result happened. Now this boy's not going to hurt anybody anymore. But not only does it go awry and she ends up getting raped, but then nothing happened to the boy anyway. So it's like a double injury. It's like she got raped twice.
That's right. Well, that's like the whole worst part of the whole story, was that not only was the guidance poor and misled guidance, that because it was done the way it was, there were no repercussions for the perpetrator, none. And imagine now you have another set of parents that are now kidding themselves, making themselves believe that the only reason their kid got in trouble is because he was set up. You know, you got to remember that end of it too, because I'm sure that is what any lawyer or anybody who's going to protect this kid is going to say. Well, all these people, this was like vigilantism. We can't do that in this country. So she not only hurt the young girl, but like you just said, she made the entire episode null and void because of the way she handled it unprofessionally and without enough people being involved so that it went the way she thought it would go. You know, what is it that old saying, the best laid plans of mice and men, is you really do, and we've talked about this on the show before, as much as we bitch and complain about our enforcers, they do have some protocol. They've had to have, because that's been around as long as there's been people around. There's been the people who are in charge of keeping everybody copacetic. And so it's not beginning. Law enforcement didn't just come out in the 50s or 60s. It's been here forever. So there has to be something that's set up that is organized and helps them, you know, get their man, so to speak. So, but I do think that in reading this story, we also came to a couple very important realizations, and we've said it before, is the fact that in many, many cases, nobody listens, Shell. And when we do get somebody who listens, they're not in a place of training and authority to be able to make a true difference. Instead, they just screw it up. So it's all sad. The whole story was sad. Tuesday, we talked about what happened to Izzy Kalman's program. And
yeah.
I meant this week, but things have gotten away with me a little bit with some other stuff, but I meant this week to contact Izzy and let him know about this story and let him know that we talked and let him know that we did our best to set people straight. I'm sure he knows about it because I'm sure from the comments that we read after the story, there were some people that were indignant about what was said about the program, so I'm sure somebody has been in touch with him. But it's still in my on my tablet to call Izzy or email him and let him know what we read. However, another situation where somebody reads something or peruses something very lightly and then makes a call on it, a decision on it. If somebody had really read the workbook from beginning to end in the workbook, Shell, it talks about this workbook is for professionals, teachers, counselors, school administrators. They're the ones that are supposed to read the workbook and what's written in the workbook and teach it, not
right.
Leave it up to the kids to see a flyer and the parents to see a flyer and think that the school is mandating, you know, that the kids tolerate being treated badly. So it's scary to me that, again, that the people that are in leadership roles aren't leading, again. You know, I mean, it seems to be the name of the game.
Right, and because it appeared like the it was a principal who had set that that flyer out, right? It was the principal?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Principal. So evidently, you and I have read excerpts from the workbook, and for the principal to make the deduction that it was a woman or a man, do you remember?
I want to say it was a man, but I don't really remember. But I think it was
I'll
a man.
I'll say he just...
The
just,
lead principal.
Right. So I'll say the principal then. But obviously the principal didn't read it thoroughly in order to interpret it the way that it was interpreted, because if you just read, this is one of the things we were talking about, if you just read the checklist, the quick reference review at the end of the chapter or at the end of the series, and you just read those captions, they'll have one meaning. But if you read the text preceding the quick reference list that he gives you, it explains them in detail. It sounds to me like this principal just did like a spot thing, you know, flipped through the book, found a couple things that looked interesting, saw the checklist and ran with it, making his own interpretation without reading the course history. You know, how irresponsible is that? If he read it and didn't understand it, shame on him, because Izzy could not be clearer in the way he explains things. He gives examples.
I know.
Very, very easy book to understand, very easy concepts to understand, you know. So if he read it and misunderstood it that way, then I don't understand how he got to be the principal of a school, because it's showing me cognitive difficulties. And if he did what I said, which is what I'm deducing he did, which is like kind of spot read through the book and then found that list and then kind of ran with the list, understanding the deeper meaning behind each one of the items on the list, then that's also a shame on him, because it that's irresponsible. You know, we teach kids not to do that, you know, not to look at half a story or a quarter of the information and then run, and then this principal does it. What a poor example.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's exactly what took place. I mean, that's what comes to my mind. That's the only way. I mean, I would hate to think that he read the whole thing and that's what he got out of it. Then I'd really be worried. But I think you're right. I think that he perused it, thought, okay, the head honchos got us this book, spent the money on this, so what do we do with it? I don't have enough staff. I don't have enough this to sit and do classes on this, so let's just put this out there and send it home and let's let the parents work on this. This is really the parents' job. I mean, can't you just hear that going through somebody's mind who's too busy and doesn't want to take the time and doesn't really think it's going to help anyway? So
yep.
That's what I believe happened as well. That's what makes the most sense to me. And again, the biggest reason is because otherwise it would mean that he's an idiot. I mean, it just would. It would mean that he doesn't understand what he's reading and he needs more help than some of his students. So.
And unfortunately, I have met, thank goodness it's only been a few, I have great respect for teachers. I have great respect for people that want to be educators. I've met some people in that. They were very passionate about it. We've read stories about teachers
yeah.
that were imaginative and that just really were into shaping young minds. But I've also come across as either when I was a student or now that I'm an adult with nieces and nephews in school, I've come across some teachers and principals, vice principals and principals, that as far as I'm concerned are too dull-witted. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as an observation. They're too dull-witted to be involved in any kind of education of young people, and I don't understand how they ended up in that job. I don't understand how they ended up being in front of a class or being the principal of a school, because I talk to them, and there seems to be no light behind the eyes. There's like no understanding of what I'm saying to them. And I'm pretty blunt and direct.
I think that saying is the lights are on, but nobody's
innuendos.
Home.
right. Lights on, nobody's home type of deal. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and I sit there and I'm in wonderment of like, how did they get in this position? How did they get in a position of education when they don't seem to have any high level of cognizance about anything going on around them or even what I'm saying to them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and you do wonder. And you do, you know, I always make excuses for people because I figure on certain journeys, there's a certain amount of time and effort that have to go into certain journeys. And, of course, being a teacher or being involved in the school system is one of those journeys. There's school, there's education, there's desire, there's all these kind of things that play into it from the point of view of somebody who's looking at it or considering it to all of the kids about, you know, what they want to do. I've mentioned before that Joshie wants to be a psychologist, and we talk about that all the time, and little things like that. So it's a journey, right? So you have to assume that if somebody chooses that journey, there's some desire there, right? I mean, wouldn't it seem like, unless, you know, there was a time And that still goes on, where something is played up, where something sounds exciting and desirable, and to a young person, maybe in some cases some of our teachers today, maybe that's how they ended up where they are, because they listen to people talk about, you know, how you can change the world by being a teacher, how you can do this by being a teacher. Maybe there was no talk about whether or not they were really suited for it, because there is a certain amount of dedication. There's a certain amount of, not just dedication and education, but desire to want to make a difference in a kid's life, I would think, to be a good teacher, right?
Uh-huh.
Just like to be a good politician. Sadly, today, I think the criteria to be a good politician is that you have a closet at home that's got so many skeletons in it that they'll never get through all of them, and then that way you can rise to a real high power. So I don't know what the deal is with years go by. In my 66 years, I've seen several different vocations be played up. Have everybody talking about, be a teacher because you can change the world, or join the army, you can change the world, do this and you can make all the difference and you can be somebody. There was another one, be somebody, join the French Foreign Legion, whatever it was, you know. So maybe that's what happened. Maybe we went through a time when it was easier to get into school to become a teacher. Maybe there were incentives. I don't know. But there's a lot of teachers out there that I think can rock the world, and there's a lot of teachers out there who just took it as a job.
Right,
Like a lot of other things, you know, like nurses, too. Nurses, you find a nurse that, like, blows you away because even when she touches you, you know, she takes a hold of your shoulder or your hand or something when you're in trauma in a hospital, and you feel the fact that she's right there with you and she cares, and you can depend on her to make sure that the right things happen to you or yours. And then there's other ones who, you know, their mind is already at the bar down on the corner, and they're not even caring whether you're in pain or whether you have a temperature or what the deal is with you, right? I mean, we all know that, too.
Exactly. Well, one of the things I would like to cover on a future show, I had mentioned this once before, but I would love for us to talk about the Ron Clark story. This is a true story. It was a movie, a 2006 movie, with Matthew Perry. Matthew Perry played the teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the most incredible, what was incredible is that it was a true story. And those are my favorites because it's not someone's imagination. It's something that really happened. And it can be a life lesson. It can be something that people can take from because this thing actually happened and ended up the way you see it in the movie. It's not somebody giving it a fairy tale happy ending. It had a legitimate happy ending. And this
mm-hmm.
teacher was so in tune with the kids. And he did quit at one point in the movie because the kids were just brutal. He was at a very violent school. The kids were very demoralizing. They stuck him in a class with all the kids that were incorrigible, that none of the other teachers could deal with. And because he wanted the job so badly, they said, fine, then you got to take this class on, thinking he'd be there for 1 year and be gone. It almost happened that way because he almost did leave. But then I don't remember if it was his girlfriend or another friend or somebody said, this is what you want to do. You're going to have to put your big boy pants on and figure out how to reach
mm-hmm.
these kids. Is this what you wanted to do or not? You know, it's not their fault you're not reaching them. It's your fault you're not reaching them. Figure out why you're not reaching them and fix it. And it was like a turning point in the movie for him that instead of blaming the kids for being unruly, he started taking responsibility for the fact, okay, what am I doing that's not getting their attention and making them respect me? And he went through this turn in his own personality and figured out how to reach the kids. It was remarkable. And again, I keep stressing this is a true story. It's not like Hollywood made up. And he went back in, and by the end of that year, he had won those kids over. Not only did they respect him, but he made them respect each other. And that was one of the things we talked about, you know, when we talk about Is He Common? He made these kids look at each other as friends, not as warring factions, not as the blacks and the whites and the Spanish and the popular kids and the nerdy kid, you know, get rid of all the classifications. He made them look at each other as friends and started instilling camaraderie. And it was amazing because here all these troubled kids, by the end of the show, cared about each other and cared about him. And there's actually a Ron Clark Academy. And what I don't understand is, looking at the success, I mean, they made a movie out of it. Looking at the success of this program and what he did, and that there's actually an academy out there, why is it that they're an academy? Why isn't this part of the curriculum to teach all teachers? Why does there have to be a separate academy that if a teacher wants to be better, she can go to the Ron Clark Academy? Why wasn't something so successful that was recognized by movie makers not made part of the curriculum to teach all teachers how to reach children, especially hard-to-reach children, because that is one of the reasons why teachers become teachers with their, you know, with all of this ambition, and then after 2 or 3 years of having, you know, what they see as bratty kids who don't give a damn, and they become demoralized and they stop being teachers, you know, and then it just becomes a job, and they don't really apply themselves to the kids anymore. You know, that's what I was so impressed with this story, is he took the responsibility on. He said, if I'm not reaching the kids, he believes that all kids can be reached, that it's just a matter of approaching them the right way. And he figured it out. And it is one of the most emotionally roller coaster type of movies, because a couple of times he was, and I think at one point he did quit and then he came back, you know. But it would be something. It would definitely a worthwhile movie to watch. And I would like to research on the Academy. Maybe we'll do a show on this and talk about why, in fact, it isn't made part of the standard school curriculum. Looking at the success rate.
Well, that's a great question, and I think that you're right. I think that it doesn't make any sense that they found something that moves mountains, so to speak, and don't utilize it. My guess is, in the world of bureaucracy, is it's about money in the first format, and secondly, about desire, about the people who want to put in the extra or take out the extra. That's usually what stops something, honey. It's you know, what we do 5 days a week in the scheme of things is nothing. And yet, we've both talked about this in our own small way. We feel like we make a difference with the handful of people that listen to us, listen to the recordings on my Facebook page and get back to me 2 weeks later. I listen to your show. You and Shelley are funny, or you and Shelley talk about things that everybody else is talking about and everything. Is it a whole bunch of people? No, it isn't. And could we quit it tomorrow? We don't make any money doing it. I pay money to do the channel on Blog Talk. I just feel like in my own small way, it's making this little itty-bitty difference. And quite frankly, if you don't ever feel that way about anything, you don't ever do those extra steps, honey. How many people do we know that have good hearts that would help if they knew, if somebody walked up to them and said, Susie, can you do this for me because I really need this? They're good people and they do it in a heartbeat. But will they go above and beyond to look for somebody to help, or will they make a decision that's going to change the world? Not very often. Not very often. So when you've got a teacher or an administrator that's running a school someplace, and he's told, this is how much money you have to work with, don't put any extra money because otherwise we'll have to let some of the teachers go and you'll have to teach a class, what's his decision going to be? What's her decision going to be?
All right.
So a lot of times when you have the good people that really want to make a difference, and we've seen movies about this a million times, the person that fights City Hall and takes out of their own pocket. I mean, I've talked to 100 teachers in the last 10 years who tell me even today that the minute the sales go on at Staples or Kmart or Walmart or anything, they're in there buying school supplies, because they don't ever have enough to work with. So they take it out of their own money. Now, we both know that if you're in a classroom where a teacher doesn't care that much, you don't have enough supplies to work with. If that's true, that somebody else is having to do that, and everybody's not doing it, then you can bet that there's classrooms without enough supplies, right? I mean, you know, that's kind of like a given.
Right.
But my guess is, with a story like the Ron Clark story, is if it opened anybody's eyes, you are, you know, we've talked about this before. Shelley is one of those kind of people who listens closely and reads between the lines. And how many people can you honestly say that you know are like that? Most people skim read, just like the person who read Izzy's information. That's all he did, was he perused it, skimmed it, didn't get the gist of it, period. So, you know, we live our lives with people like that. And when we talk about what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable, what we talked about with yesterday about what people will tolerate because it's what they're used to, this is one of those things, you know. Well, we're all right now. We're getting by doing it the way we're doing it. Yeah, we don't have any rock stars, you know, coming out of our school, but everybody's graduating. And there, the law, No Child Left Behind. What's that about?
I know.
I don't want to leave a kid behind either, but that doesn't mean I don't want them to know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah,
right?
and they shouldn't lower the standards, and they shouldn't come out with dopey stuff like just trying to get the kids to pass the SATs without understanding what it is they're doing. I mean, you hear all these scandals at schools about how they, you know, they messed with the tests so that the school average, like if there was a problem kid, they would. I actually heard of this one school. This was years ago. I don't remember what state this was in, but that what they did is they kept expelling kids that had really, really poor grades as behavioral problems because they didn't want their, they wanted to be able to say that they were producing more, you know, like a higher level body of students. So if there was anybody
right.
that was skewed in any direction, instead of giving them assistance to get their grades up, they would find reasons to expel them for behavioral difficulties until they finally forced them to go to a different school. And that's unconscionable.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. That happens a lot. That happens a lot. So I guess the deal with sorry to say, I don't even remember how we got here from what we were talking about, but I do think it's about paying attention and understanding and trying a little bit harder and not accepting what everybody else says has to be in our world today. I do think that there's a lot of things that can be changed. And when you talk about accepting what it seems to be the norm, sometimes you have to, you know, rise above and think with your own head instead of thinking with someone else's. So the flyers that went out, we're disappointed about that, and you'll be hearing more about that from us, because we love the Golden Rule. We believe it. We think it works. Shelley and I both kind of practice it in our own personal lives. The world is filled with you know, imperfection. So learning how to deal with the imperfections of yourself and with others helps the world be more copacetic. Not to tolerate somebody else's bad behavior. I'm not an advocate of that, but I am an advocate of trying to see the other side of a story and trying to understand what's going on before you make an assumption that can often lead to turmoil, hatred, things that aren't good for you, really are
mm-hmm.
not good for you.
Right.
So yesterday, Wednesday, we talked about the zoos. And I knew Shelley would research this and really find out the truth, and I have really felt bad about everything that we learned on Wednesday. The whole week. I've talked to some of the kids about it. I've talked to my husband about it. I liked it before when I thought that when elephants were swaying back and forth, they were all in unison, like, you know, cabaret or something. I was much happier believing that. And I was much happier believing that when a tiger or a wolf in a small cage was running back and forth, he was reacting like a puppy, excited to see you. I liked believing that, and now I don't. Now I see things in a totally different light, and it's upsetting to me. And I hope if you listen to the show, it's upsetting to you.
Do I want to not ever see young people experience a circus or a zoo? Of course not. But Shelley brought up some good points about natural habitats, sanctuaries, etc. I'm not sure they're the answer, because I'll be honest, I don't know how in the state of Florida you can replicate a sanctuary that's going to make a polar bear happy. I don't see how you can in Minnesota come up with something that's going to keep the monkeys and orangutans and apes and everything of the warmer climated areas happy in Minnesota. So I worry about some of those things. I'm sure there's a way to get past all of that, but it's over my head. So
well,
I don't want to see
one of the things
away.
Well, first of all, I don't believe that we should take animals from their natural habitats. As cultural and amazing as it is, I don't think it should be done from an ethical standpoint. That being said, if it's going to happen, there are ways to do it where you would at least be, if you're doing it to show people the animals, then really show them. You know, only have habitats in natural areas. So in the cold states, you'd have the cold animals, and in the warmer states, you'd have the animals that are in hot climates, and then have multiple of them. Don't have one polar bear, you know, because I SeaWorld or something, they have a polar bear habitat there, and there's this one guy sitting in there, you know. No, they travel in groups, and they breed, you know, but, you know, how do you have them breed in captivity? So you open up this whole thing, but, you know, it's like, it's so hard to look at it from an ethical standpoint. There are definitely ways of doing it better. There are ways of doing it where the animal doesn't suffer and where you can still have that cultural, you know, ability. But like I said, if just like going to Disney, you don't have Disneyland in every city. You don't have Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure in every city. No, you have one in California and have one in Florida, which means the people in the rest of the country, if they want to go to Disney or Universal, they have to travel to one of these states. So if you want to have circuses, if you want to have these type of natural environments to go and see animals in, then put them in states that really, as closely as possible, match the natural habitat of that animal, and then travel there to see it. It's certainly easier to go across the country than it is around the world to another country. So you're still allowing the ability for people to see these things. It becomes more special. And then you start teaching people to have a reverence for animals. Part of the problem with us today is that we are almost taught from little children that it's okay to exploit other living things. And this is where that whole speciesism concept comes from, that Pete Singer talks about in his book Animal Liberation, because the idea that another living being that's of lesser value than you, for whatever reason, it's okay to make them suffer as long as you're deriving some benefit from it, is one of the things that allow things like zoos and circuses. People don't care about the suffering of the animal. If they recognize it, they turn it off, because it seems normal, because they're enjoying looking at the animal. They're fascinated. They're in awe. It's beautiful. It's a day out with the kids. It's exciting, you know, and you look at all that. But you turn a blind eye to the suffering of the animal because, for whatever reason, we've been conditioned to think that animals are lesser than us, lesser of deserving of consideration, that they shouldn't suffer for our pleasure. And, you know, so it's this whole pervasive attitude. And I used to have it when I was younger. So I understand it. And that's why I understand how wrong it is and how I feel now that I think the way I think, I'm much more at peace with myself. I feel much more connected and much more consistent, because now my values are consistent across the board. I'm not a humane person that doesn't hurt another human being. Now I'm a humane person that doesn't inflict exploitation on any living animal, and it's a much more consistent way of living. I don't have one area of my actions contradicting another area of my actions. Once I became vegetarian, once I became more sensitive to animal plights and things like that, it made me feel more whole in the way I conducted my life. But that's, you know, these are broad concepts. They're dealt with very well in some of the books that have come out. So I do recommend people read Animal Liberation, because some of the concepts in there, he was the first one to ever analyze them, and some of the parallels he made. One of the things he talked about was the Nazis. The Nazis actually perpetrated a form of speciesism when they started hurting other human beings that they felt were lesser than them somehow. You know, the Jews were lesser than the Aryans, the blue-eyed, blonde-haired Aryans. For some reason, they were lesser of consideration, so it was okay to hurt them and even kill them, because they didn't deserve the same level of consideration, that they shouldn't suffer and they shouldn't lose their lives and they shouldn't, you know, be entrapped. You know, what about the day and age when they used to throw the prisoners to the lions for the pleasure of the Romans, you know, the Roman hierarchy? So throughout history, humans have done this to each other, and we do it to anybody that we see as lesser of consideration. So it's a bigger picture, because that's why I said it's so cultural, and it has to happen as a grassroots effort, and over time, people will become more sensitive to that and look for better ways of doing things. Every time anything has changed throughout history, look at women today. There was a time that women had no rights. There was a time that women had a miserable existence in comparison to men, right? And because of grassroots efforts, some that resulted in great violence and loss of life, women today now have privileges they didn't even have 50 years ago. The same thing will happen here. I think it's our normal course that over time we become more and more civilized as a civilization. We become more and more sensitive to the plight of others, even if it would be animals. There's a lot of animal activists out there. There's a lot more vegetarians than ever before in history. It would shock a lot of people how many sports figures, politicians, movie stars and actresses are vegetarians and vegans. You know, do you know that Rob Zombie, the guy with all the horror movies and the acid rock music and all that, he's a vegan, for God's sake. It's like, oh, my God, he's a vegan. It shocked me when I found that out. But, you know, some real characters you would never think have gone that route with their lives, you know. And it's so I think that's where we're headed as a civilization, to be more concerned about the plight of others, whether it be another human being or another animal. And I really think that even though you read so much bad stuff, I think that's where we're headed as a civilization, as a species. And I think it's the only way we can go in order to preserve happiness.
Well, I would agree with all of that. And I do think that we are ever learning and ever moving forward with our humanism. And I think it's been a long road. And I do think that we're finally getting someplace. We are out of time, though, and I still wanted to talk about the diary of abuse that we talked about yesterday, and the fact that we think so many happening to them because they don't know anything different and because they suffer from the maybe it's me syndrome. So we will continue that talk, and we will continue the conversation in regard to some of the different shootings that have happened in the last couple months and the outcome of them, because I had an epiphany yesterday when I heard the news story about Michael Brown. And then today, a young man was on the news because a cop, he pulled into a gas station, went to get out of his truck, and the cop said, let me see your license and registration. He reached back in his car, or in his truck, to get it. As the cop pulled up behind him, it's all on video, and the cop says, get out of your truck, get out of your truck, and screams at him. He's turned around, he's like, I'm getting my license. The cop shoots him in the hip. So I want to talk about how much of this has evolved because of fear. And
yep.
I cannot believe somebody chooses to be a cop just to shoot people. And if that's true, then shame on us for not paying better attention. But so we're going to talk about all that stuff again next week. I hope In the interim, everybody have a great, great weekend. It's a little bit cooler here in South Florida. We'll all be enjoying that. So go out there and have a good weekend, everybody. God bless. Bye-bye. Thanks, honey.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks, everyone. Have a beautiful weekend, and we'll get back to you on Monday.